Welcome, both of you. We are recording this. We had a couple of things on our agenda, which, given that it's just the two of you, we can do a fast walk through them if you're interested, or we can skip any of that. But one of the things, so two things on our agenda were just a couple of quick notes about the funding policy guidelines. We spoke about those in August. I can't remember if you both were on in August. But if you have, there's not really anything new to report, but we can kind of just go over the timetable if you're interested. And then the other thing, we were going to kind of just show off, Amelia worked on updating our high injury network map, which is pretty cool. So I guess I'll ask, since it's just the two of you, are you interested, you know, is there anything specific on the funding policy guidelines you'd like to go over?
I'd like to hear about it again at a high level.
Okay, we could do that.
Doesn't have to be in depth, I don't think, but.
Okay. Well, I guess the cliff notes are, we are going to be opening our next round of funding on September 26th, which is next Friday. So right after our policy meeting next week, we've made a few changes. Well, okay, so we're assuming that these changes are going to go into effect. We're asking our policy committee to approve the changes that our committees have been talking about since May. We didn't make a lot of huge changes, but we did just a couple of the highlights on our resurfacing program. We upped the cap on what communities can ask for their first project, so from 800,000 to 1 million. So that, you know, has an effect. We're not going to have a carbon reduction program funding round this year, just because we're very over-programmed in that. We changed a little bit on how we score safety. As before, if something's on the Safe Streets for All High Injury Network, you can receive 25 points. But we're upping if a project is on our annual crash reports as a high crash location, you can receive 20 points instead of 15. So things like that. But I guess some of the other more significant changes are, we just kind of clarified some of the things, like different complete streets elements, how we score things like rapid flashing beacons or medians within roadways and stuff. We're still incentivizing all of that kind of stuff, the stuff that makes for a more pedestrian and bicycle friendly environment. But we're just trying to clarify how we score some of those things. So those are kind of the main changes. Curtis, did I miss any of the big ones that you think we should cover, or is that pretty much it?
No, I think you did a nice job of hitting all the high points.
Any changes to TASA funding?
Yes. Major, though. Yeah, what?
More points for ownership, I heard.
I was just going to say, so if you own the asset, if the community owns the asset, you know, it's 5 extra points. We also are incentivizing right-of-way criteria. So it's if the right-of-way and then project readiness. So how far along the project is. That's the other thing. So a few extra points there. And I think that was it on the.
Well, did the amount of TASA awards increase? I think it used to be 700,000.
I mean, 4 years ago it was 700.
Two.
We bumped it.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry. Yeah, and then 2 years ago we bumped it. Yeah. To 1 million. So it's the same.
It's 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
It was last time. Yep.
And are there funds available? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're you know, grain of salt, like. We're only funded through fiscal year 2026, so anything we're awarding, you know, is predicated on future federal highway bills. But we are anticipating, if levels stay the same, we'd have close to, I think, $3 million, depending on where we are right now.
Okay.
But we kind of finalize that run after, once we get all the applications in, then we see what our budget is, and we try to give our communities like an estimate of what we think's available. But, you know, it's not until we kind of get a little closer that we'll say, hey, for sure we can award, you know, say $3 million projects, which is what I would hope for, or even a couple. I'm hoping we get a couple of small ones too, just to help us, you know, sidewalk type jobs, just to, ones that might be able to be delivered quickly.
I would imagine the Rubber City Heritage Project, City of Akron, would be in there.
Yes.
I think Hudson's
planning to apply for their section that they are getting ownership of. I feel like someone else told me they were planning on submitting TASA. I know the City of Green is planning to submit at least one sidewalk project.
Metro Parks, I think, is planning on submitting, aren't they?
But I'm not sure what.
Maybe for the connector between the towpath and the bike and hike, or?
I think that is it, Bill.
I know we talked about that one.
Yeah, that might be what they're thinking.
I haven't heard from Portage Parks, though. Have you, Matt?
I mean, they certainly may still apply, but, you know, the project funding that they have right now for the Headwaters Trail, like, that project's moving pretty slowly. Yeah. So I don't know if they'd be ready to apply for more funding for that.
I would assume we would get Wayne Rails to Trails.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet you're right. Yeah. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Heartland Trail in, So I think it's next year, or like I was going to say in 26, but it's probably 2027, we're going to be building another phase of that trail, extending it north of Marshallville Village, just for another little more than a mile. But that's the trail that eventually will connect Oroville with the towpath in Clinton. So there's still several more phases of that, but I think Curtis is right. I'd kind of anticipate that we'll get another request for that. But yeah, I haven't heard from anyone else. Not that I can think of.
A few. That'll be up at $3 million pretty fast.
It's always a competitive program.
I was going to say, there's probably seven or eight of them that they don't tell us, and they just fly on in at the deadline. So it's always competitive.
Cuyahoga Falls doing anything? I keep hearing about.
I've not heard anything definitive from them. I haven't even heard anything informal from their staff that, hey, we're thinking about applying for this. I know they got other funding for their phase two of the Mudbrook Trail.
I think that was from Clean Ohio.
I believe so, but I can't remember the exact source, but I think it was Clean Ohio. Yeah. So I can't think of anything that I've talked informally with them about that they might apply for TASA on. So I'm not necessarily anticipating anything, but you never know. We had something like 20 applications last time, or I think it was even more than that in the 2023 funding round for TASA. So you never know. There are always some that come out of the woodwork.
So the applications are due
November 7th, correct?
Friday, November 7th.
Yeah.
And you expect to make the award by the end of the year?
Possibly, but I would more expect. I don't know if we're going to be able to have a draft out by December on the TASA. That's usually the one that takes the longest to score, just because it's a little more subjective. But I'm guessing our February meeting will have the draft list for sure.
Yeah, and if there are any questions along the way, like, please ask, you know, if if anything, you know, if you guys are involved in anything that comes in as part of an application, I know you'd be working with the communities, but definitely encouraging people to let us know if you have questions as you apply, or just questions on the project itself, you know, how to make it more competitive and that kind of stuff. We're happy to help with that.
Okay. Your other okay. item was something, some improved map, I think you said, or?
The other item, yes. So Amelia's going to present on this. You guys might remember a couple of years ago, our office did a Safe Streets for All action plan. It was just another way of looking at safety within our office. In addition to our annual crash report, Safe Streets for All is focused more squarely on the more serious crashes, so fatalities and serious injury crashes. And a central part of that is putting together what's called a high injury network. So we've had a high injury network that we created 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And so when we wrote that report, we kind of committed to updating the high injury network every 2 years. We'd pull in new crash data as it was available. And so Amelia's been working on that with a little help from Seth. And so they've put together a nice new web map here that has some new features on it and, of course, has the new data in it. So Amelia was just going to kind of show that off and show you some of the features of that.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay. I'm going to start on the AMATS webpage. Can everyone see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay. You go to reports and data, Safe Streets for All, and that's going to take you to our new high injury network. So you'll get to the first page. I'm going to give it a second to load. It might take a minute. But this page is going to be our basic high injury network, if it will. Nice. This one was preloaded. So scrolling here, we have, like I said, just the original high injury network, nothing too fancy about it. You can scroll into an intersection or segment, click on it, and the right-hand side is going to pull up some information for you. This can also go away, and you can just focus solely on the map. Next, we have the same thing, but this one just kind of gives you the option to put some of our demographics underneath. So I will just choose one, give it a moment, and it'll pull up underneath there just for, gives you a different perspective and look on some of the crash data we have. We also want to give you the opportunity. Yeah.
I live in Ohio, in Hudson, and yes. Bill lives in Stowe. What do you got in Hudson and Stowe? Anything over there?
Let's look. That's also where I grew up as well.
Nothing at 303 and 91, even though it's a very, very busy intersection.
Yeah, you can, I mean, Streetsboro and 14 is one of our, you know, if you've ever made your way that way. Yeah. And then down in Stowe, I know, what else do we have? Yeah.
We have some segments. It doesn't look like this one.
Which was, I know that was on before also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Kent Road, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Graham.
So that means it's had 7 fatal or serious injury crashes along the segment in the past 5 years.
Wow. Fatal?
Fatal or serious injury.
And if you're interested in looking
at... And actually, we'll be able to
double-check
that in a second. Mm-hmm.
Yes, on this page, you can actually go ahead and look at all the crashes narrowed down by severity. So if we wanted to look at fatal and serious injury crashes along that road, we can go ahead and look again. Am I on the right one? I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking like they're all seven were serious injury, so no fatal along the segment. And we can tell that by looking at the legend right here. We can pull up again as well. So if there are any fatal crashes, they would be orange triangles for you.
Amelia, if you just slide up a little bit further north, like just to give a sense of the timeline of the data, that was that bicycle fatality on, was it Colin Young?
Colin Young, yeah.
Yeah, that's that red triangle was the truck driver ran a stop sign.
Yeah, we can see that in the... on the right as well. That'll give you all the information if you're interested.
Yep.
All right. And then we can also do the same thing, but if you want to break it down even further by year, if you're interested in a specific year to look at the data, it's going to start you on 2017, but you can turn that off and turn a different one on. I would only recommend having one on at a time. You can pull up the legend again, make it go away, and you can also now filter it by crash severity, but make sure you're using the correct filter in correspondence to the year. So I want to look at 29 fatal crashes only. If I also want to look at the serious injury, I can just turn that on, and they will both show up on the map for you. But I can also turn those off, and it'll go back to normal. And then we also
You don't have a filter. You don't happen to have a filter for crashes involving bicycles, would you?
Well, we do have a separate page, bike and pedestrian, for you if you're interested in those specifically. This one doesn't go as far as breaking it down by the year. But, of course, if you were to go and click on one, I believe... we can look at one of these. All the information will correspond. It'll pop up on the right side if you give it a minute. Wow. There is a lot of data, so sometimes it will take a second to load, but yeah, it should be able to give you anything you're interested in as well. And you can turn this on for the last year. They're broken down by the last high injury network in this one as well. So you can look at the old one with a little bit of a different symbol. And the new one, you can look at both at once if you're interested in that. Yeah, very customizable. Any other questions?
A lot of data.
It is a lot of data. We also do have, that reminds me, we also do have the option of looking at the data broken down into numbers with some charts and some graphs as well, if that is more of a better visual. And those will be marked by crash data, or there's also some high injury data down here as well on the right corner.
So I hate to focus so much on bicycles, but let's say we want to have like number of bicycle incidents by year from 2017 to 2023. We'd be able to get that from here.
Yep.
Can you send me that?
Absolutely. This is on our website for you, and all you have to do is on this bike and pedestrian page I have clicked on, you just have to go to bike and ped data in the bright red on the bottom right, and that'll pop up for you.
Okay.
Anything else?
Bill? Got any?
No.
Anything?
That's Like you said, a lot of data there. I'm surprised that you look at the number of minor crashes, a lot.
Yeah, a lot of, all the yellow are injury crashes. They could be minor, but they aren't severe injuries.
Are they, those represent a crash, you know, an injury as a result of a crash of a bike with a motor vehicle, or is it just, Could it be just a, you know, somebody, you know, had a crash on their own on a bicycle?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but vehicle involved.
Vehicle involved. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They are not all vehicle involved.
There are some that aren't.
Yeah. So if you look, each time you drill into one, if it says number of vehicles won, then that would be a bicycle only incident. Most cases, though, it's going to involve a vehicle because these are vehicular crash reports that are derived.
These are being generated from. Okay, thanks, Seth. Mm-hmm.
They're based on police reports, I imagine. So there'd have to be a police report filed. Yeah. So if I just crash my bike in a ditch, that's not going to show up on there.
Yeah, I guess if you can get up and ride away with no one reporting it, then you're probably not going to be on here.
Okay. Yeah. If we had, Seth, a crash where, like, somebody wiped out, you know, really bad and were injured and called 911 and an ambulance came, we probably would have a report of that on this, chances are. You're muted, Seth.
Yeah, it's very possible. We could run a – I can't do it right now because it would take the next hour for me to pull up the data in GIS to actually do this, the search, but I can do a filter to see how many one unit crashes were the pedal cycle crash. It would probably be a pretty small number.
Here's another, the more I'm thinking about this now. What about e-bikes? Is it able to filter down and determine whether it was an e-bike involved in a crash versus a regular bicycle?
No, they don't specify that level of detail in the vehicles yet. They may in the future add that as a separate category, but right now the only thing that it identifies as a bicycle is they're all lumped into one category right now.
I'd love to see them start tracking e-bike crashes separately.
Here's a story for you. My wife and I are up here in Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakefront Park in Michigan, and there's a Sleeping Bear Heritage Trail, which we rode today, which has some pretty big hills on it, including a 12% climb. And as we start up, but here come an e-bike down with a big guy on it, and he coming down the hill, he goes, "I just hit 38 miles an hour." And he goes zooming past us on a curve. I'm like, oh, my God.
Those things are crazy. I mean, how fast.
Nothing against e-bikes.
No. But then the weight of them, too, pulling you downhill, it can be something else.
So, Ron, you did a trail with 12% grade?
Yeah. And so did Pat. Nothing, nothing compared to climbing out of the valley, though.
Yeah,
beautiful up here though, I have to say. Well, very nice. Yes. That's a lot of.
And sorry, any other questions or anything? I'll stop sharing the screen.
Very impressive.
Definitely worth checking out sometime though. If you have a moment, just go to our website and you can get lost. You know, just. Like lost in a good way, playing around, just looking at crashes. And I especially think it's useful to go to that all crashes page because you can just zoom into an area like, hey, what kind of crashes were in my neighborhood or, you know, down here and basically pull up not the full reports, but, you know, all the main details from each report. It's pretty interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Stop sharing. Cool.
So that's all we had for our agenda. But of course, as always, we're all here if there's anything you guys want to talk about. And I figure there might be, given.
What would that be, Matt?
Recent events. but yeah, so you guys have the floor.
Well, I sat beside Matt at the Metro RTA meeting where Metro is trying to see if there's any interest in acquiring the right-of-ways. They've heard from the FTA that they need to pay them $12.8 million for all three right-of-ways, and Metro's looking for ways to not have to pay all that themselves. At the time, they were saying there was going to have to be letters of intent placed by a few days later, like September 8th, and then the board was going to meet on September 9th, and they were going to get back to FTA on September 11th. But that got pushed back 30 days. FTA gave them an extension. I've not heard anything. I've talked to Metro RTA twice since then. They've said there is no deadline for letters of intent yet, but they thought there might be, and that they're meeting in Boston this week with APTA, American Public Transportation Agency or Association, where they got an award, and they were going to be talking about their reply to FTA while they were there. And they said if they had any information, they'd call me on Wednesday. And I haven't heard anything from anybody, so I'll probably call tomorrow. But are you hearing anything more than that?
No,
it's been, last thing we heard was we got the email, you know, Matt kind of was debriefed us that day that you got back from the meeting. And then what was it within 24 hours or so, we got the email saying there was an extension. And it's, I mean, and I know you saw Nate Lepo today. I don't know if there was any additional discussion.
I didn't get to talk to him. No.
Yeah.
So other than the news of the extension, I've not heard anything. And I'm sure Matt Mullen would have told me if he had heard something. So yeah.
Well, Matt, if you remember, there was some discussion about having Brian Nelson from Summit County host a meeting of possible coalition partners, let's call it.
Yeah, trying to put together a coalition. They were, yeah. That was what their attorney was kind of trying to encourage. I think that's what Metro would love to see.